Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Hello, everybody. It's me, Roscoe, and welcome to another Kings of Anglia Issues Town podcast. And yes, I'm back in the hot seat. AJ and Stu did a fantastic job on Monday, but I'm here to take charge for the game. Of course, looking up to Aston Villa. Also got some other little segments we're going to bring you today for our second podcast of the week. Let's bring in the boys. Let's bring in AJ first, because he hosted very well. And I think that was his first ever hosting duties on the main podcast. So how are you, my friend?
Thank you. Yeah, I'm good. It was my first time doing that, and it's more intimidating than I thought it was going to be. Even though it was just me and Stu, there was something about having to try and do it. And we sat down, we'll turn it into a bit of a discussion. And we did, but I also found myself naturally kind of going in and like asking questions and setting things up. And that was, I now think I have a new level of admiration for you and for Mark in terms of being able to do that on a weekly basis. So fair enough. I enjoyed it, but I definitely was an interesting feeling to do it.
No, you did a good job, my friend. And Stu, obviously, has done some hosting duties in the past, and he's done a very good job as well. Stu, me and you bonded, didn't we, on Saturday on the way back from Southampton. And, you already spoke about that on the pod on Monday. But I felt like we grew more and more in our friendship because of that evening.
We went through an ordeal, didn't we? Yeah. I didn't go into the full details of the journey because I didn't want to bore the listeners too much. But it was, what a day. That was a long one. I never had Southampton pegged as the longest away trip that we would hopefully ever have. Unless, of course, Ipswich get themselves into some European competition in years to come and we get sent off to some far-flung place. But I was pleased we didn't have a midweek game this week. This does feel slightly strange, doesn't it, the fixtures? I've already had a slip of the tongue about Saturday's game. It is Sunday, people, so apologies. I think I did slip into a bit of copy earlier in the week. Still getting used to this different Premier League schedule and the lack of midweek games. So I'm sure Kieran McKenna's enjoying it, having this extra time on the training pitch with his players. And I think we enjoyed having those few extra days to recover from our Southampton ordeal.
Yeah, indeed. I'm very happy that because I absolutely started pissing it down when we got to the Brentwood, you know, services or the, you know, petrol station. And we're like thinking, thank God it didn't start raining when we're on the M25 slip road, because that would have made it even worse. But no, it's something we can, you know, laugh about after, you know, getting home eventually, because that was a long day. A nice little week where we've been able to recover. I'm looking ahead to Aston Villa. But before we get on to that, boys, I've got a little few segments here. And I want to sort of get your thoughts on how the players have done so far. A lot of them have done well and stepped up well. But I want you to sort of pick a player and tell me who has impressed you the most this season. So we'll go with you, AJ, first. You've got a player to pick from. They've all done well. But who's your main pick?
Ooh, this is an interesting one. There's a few standouts here, aren't there? So I feel less bad going first and probably picking the person that Stu was going to pick. So I am going to go with Jacob Greaves. Really, really impressed with him. And I feel in a way like it's happened less with me than maybe with some other people, because I got to see him throughout pre-season. I got to watch a lot of Jacob Greaves in pre-season, and he was probably the new signing that stepped up the most. He was the one that looked the most comfortable. I know that's a little bit easier when you're coming in as a centre-back, but still, it's not an easy thing to do, to switch clubs. This is someone who's come in from his boyhood club, where he's been kind of working his way up for numerous years, and this is his big move. It's a big chance, and that can weigh on you quite a lot. So, I've been really, really impressed with him. Like his stuff on the ball, like his physicality, like what he can do in the air. That goal is going to come pretty soon. And I think in terms of the defensive side of things for Town, he's played a really huge part in all of that.
Yeah, I'm sure, Stu, that's your pick, because you like hairy-ass defenders.
It was, yeah. I think, what was it, only about 5 minutes into that Liverpool game where he absolutely smashed through Szoboszlai and got ball and man and stuck the ball into touch. That was, I thought, yeah, I'll have a bit of him. He's 24 years of age, but he's actually got bags of experience for a centre-half. He's played a lot of football for Hull, and he's earned his stripes in lower divisions and had loan moves, and he just looks ready. I was having a little look at the stats for a piece I wrote earlier in the week. Only Virgil van Dijk has made more clearances than him in the Premier League so far. He's joint fifth when it comes to aerial duels won. He's read the game really well. Some nice interceptions with low crosses into the box, and invariably he's the man to sort of cut it out. So he would have been my pick, but I think there's a number of individuals that we can pick out for praise and that we've been encouraged by. If I was going sort of next on my list, I'd go for another new player, and I'd probably go for Liam Delap. And this is, there's been several of the old guard that have taken the step up really well, and I don't want to kind of I don't want to overlook any of them too much, but Liam Delap is someone that we didn't know too much about how he would translate to the Premier League. Hadn't scored bags of goals in the Championship for his various loan spells. Bit of pressure on him, really, to lead the line as the number nine. I think when Ipswich signed him, probably the plan was, the plan was to get another striker, and maybe he'd be someone that was part of a rotation that might play wide right at times. But he's had to come in, and he's had to, with Hurst's injury as well, he's had to bear the burden of being that sort of central focal point striker. And he gets Kwanzaa subbed off at half-time against Liverpool after kind of bullying him a little bit. There was that outrageous touch and sprint down the sideline and into the box, wasn't there, in the first game. Brilliant goal against Fulham. What a way for Ipswich to score their first goal at Portman Road in the Premier League in 22 years. Charging run through the middle and arrows that shot into the top corner. Almost repeats the feat at Brighton as well. Hits the post on this occasion. We've talked about him being a bit of a juggernaut, bit of a wrecking ball with centre-halves bouncing off of him. The next challenge for him will be as people maybe wise up to him, and we saw that at Southampton last weekend where they maybe doubled up on him at times and upped their physicality against him. How he grows and improves and adapts, but bit like Greaves, really, £15 million looks a good bit of business for a player of his age. And someone that can hopefully sort of get better and better under Kieran McKenna's tutelage.
Yeah, and as you all know, that I'm a big Liam Delap fan. I'm very happy he's been able to step up and done very well, and hopefully score some more goals. I want to give a name check to Axel Tuanzebe, because this time last year, he just signed for the club, and he hadn't played much football, and obviously he's had an unbelievable journey since then. Obviously, this team have had a great journey, but for him to come into the team last year, do really well, and now he's a regular starter in the Premier League for Richard Town. So big up Axel, because he's done really well, and he just adds an extra bit of Premier League experience that we need. So, they've all done well. So I think they've all done, the fans proud, and hopefully they continue doing that for the rest of the season. And obviously, we've got five big games next up, boys, and that's what we're going to do now, is predict the next five games. Five games done. Now the next five games, 15 points up for grabs. We've got Villa at Portman Road, West Ham away, Everton at Portman Road, Brentford away, and Leicester at Portman Road, start of November. So, Stu, you're going to be working on a piece which is going to be out on Friday. So, check that out on Friday morning. But we're going to obviously have a nice little chin wag, share our predictions. Obviously, Villa up next for Town on Sunday on Sky Sports. Is it part of Super Sunday? Maybe part of Super Sunday? Or was it? Yeah. Obviously, it won't be the main focus game, obviously.
It is the only one on TV, that one. So it will be shown on Sky. Yeah. Every time I've been watching all the Sky games in the last kind of week, it's quite funny when you see Ipswich actually flash up as being shown on there. It's a little bit surreal, like even the little touches that come with it. You know, when you see the Sky adverts and you've got two players stood next to each other and they're showing like what's coming up, and you have Liam Delap next to like John McGinn or someone like that. It's a little bit strange. So yes, that one will be on TV.
God, Liam Delap must be huge next to John McGinn, because John McGinn's not big.
Well, they're put level next to each other. Unfortunately, you can't have, like, if it was like Emi Buendia or something, you wouldn't be able to then have like one stood about half a foot taller than the other, unfortunately. But yeah, it's a nice touch. The other bit that I quite liked as well is when watching the Premier League coverage is that you see lots of promo videos, and Town feature quite heavily in these, which is quite nice. As an advert for the new FIFA, which gets played every time, and there's loads of clips. I think they're probably the most shown team in that. So yeah, lots of little bits I've liked from watching the coverage.
Called the big dogs, as you sound, big dogs in the Premier League. That's what we're going to be called. Shall we then predict? I don't know how you want to do this, boys. Do we just go game by game and just sort of say what we think's going to happen? So Villa, obviously we'll do a little preview later on the podcast. But Stu, what do you reckon? Aston Villa at Portman Road, Champions League Aston Villa. Obviously first time playing European football since the 80s in terms of the European Cup and all that jazz. But yeah, what do you reckon?
We'll do a bit of a deeper dive into Villa later on in the pod, shall we? But to scratch the surface, as you mentioned, fourth in the Premier League last season, in the Champions League this season. I think they've won 6 of their opening 7 across all competitions. The only blot on their copybook is a 2-0 defeat to Arsenal, likely title contenders. Kept the bulk of their squad from last season, have added to it as well. I think they've got a top manager in Unai Emery. Big challenge for Ipswich. We've seen how they're going to attack games, particularly the home games, no matter who the opposition is, with the Liverpool game. But we've also seen now the class of those top teams with Liverpool and City, and how they will punish you. If you tire, as you did against Liverpool, as they did against Liverpool, they will pick you off. If you make mistakes, half mistakes, they will ruthlessly punish you, as we saw at the Etihad. So, Aston Villa not quite in that same bracket as Liverpool and City, but you know they are one of the top teams in the Premier League, no doubt about it. So, big ask for Ipswich to get anything out of this game. I'll track my prediction in straight away. I've gone for a repeat of the Liverpool scoreline. I've gone for 2-0 Aston Villa.
Okay, so no points starting with the first game in this 5-game predictions. AJ, what do you reckon?
Yeah, really impressed with Aston Villa. Again, but kind of go a bit more in depth in a bit, but I like the fact that my big concern with them this season was balancing Champions League football with the league. And thus far, I know it's been one game, but they've had a run now of going league fixture, Champions League fixture, EFL Cup. They balanced it really well. They've won all of them. They've rotated the squad in midweek against Wickham to get key players some minutes. Emi Buendia, for example, has been out for about a year, and then he's come back in and played and scored. And Leon Bailey, who might have to start on Sunday. Few injury issues there, but it's a good team. So I'm also going to go for a similar one. I've gone 2-1 Aston Villa.
2-1, keeping that Town scoring goals. And as we said off record, I haven't prepared much for this. And I said, you know, Town could win, they could draw, they could lose. Any result could happen. But yeah, I do think they're going to lose though. But I think they're going to be in the game though. I think I'm going to go 2-1 as well, just like you, AJ. I think Portman Road, you know, it's going to be another great atmosphere. And Sunday, just, I don't know, something different about a Sunday kickoff. It's nice to have a Saturday, you know, enjoy our Saturdays off and then get ready for Sunday. But yeah, I think a 2-1 will be a respectable scoreline against a very good Aston Villa side who have really impressed me. And just, they've got so many great players, as already spoken. And we'll obviously do a preview very shortly. But then we're on the road to London to take on West Ham. AJ, we're going to go straight to you because you obviously got that little connection there with your other half, who is a Hammers fan. Obviously, they've not had a good start to the season, have they? And you know, the last game, they didn't do well, did they? But what do you reckon?
Yeah, positivity's gone to negativity very quickly there. Great summer. I think the one bit of recruitment that fans are a little bit confused about and a little bit dubious about was the manager, to be honest, and that's probably the bit that's proven so far. He's already under pressure. The league fixtures haven't been great. I think the last thing that you want if you're on a bad league run is to have to go to Anfield in the Carabao Cup. I thought they were actually all right last night and ended up getting absolutely thrashed. They've got Alvarez missing from this weekend. I think this weekend's going to be a really important one where they go to Brentford. If they lose that, then any sort of negativity from the home game against Ipswich, which they will be expected to win, will cause a total meltdown. So I think it could already be heading into a bit of do or die territory for West Ham. And I like to think that Town could capitalise on that one. I think that could be the place where the first win comes. So narrow win. I'd be going for that one, but one to have a closer look at after the Brentford game this weekend.
Indeed. Stu, this is probably our closest away game of the season because, yeah, if you're just getting the train off Stratford, boom, you're there pretty much. What do you reckon against the Hammers?
Yeah, this one I found probably the most difficult to predict because at the start of the season, we did our kind of predictions and one of them was kind of surprise package. And I threw West Ham in there from a positive sense because I just felt like post Moyes, they might be able to sort of unify a fractured fan base and they could all get behind someone different in Lopetegui. And I like the look of the transfer business they've done. They've, from Somerville, who we've seen close up in the Championship, really exciting player. They've signed old-fashioned, robust centre-forward in Füllkrug, who we'd seen at the Euros with Germany. Trying to think who else they've brought in. They spent a fair bit of money. Tadebo, centre-half, highly rated, has come over from Ligue 1. You could go through several of them. And I was looking at their squad on paper, on top of who they already had with people like Bowen, etc., and thought, yeah, they might be one that could sort of kick on a little bit this season. But it's not started that way. And for all the reasons that there seems to be that little bit of negative vibes around them. I was listening to the phone-ins on the way home last weekend and a lot of unhappy Hammers fans at the moment. Maybe that's kind of a hangover from everything of the last sort of year or so with them being split over the style of play and stuff. But then I look at it and I know they've lost every home game so far, but those home games have been against Villa, Man City and Chelsea so far. So maybe we shouldn't put too much stock in that. And they still have got good players, as I've mentioned. And it is at their place. So they will be under pressure and Ipswich could kind of prey on that a little bit and hopefully be able to sort of turn the atmosphere their way. But after much consideration, I did opt for a West Ham win. I don't think this is a game that should be underestimated. It's still West Ham away in the Premier League. Like, do you know what I mean? I think we do have to kind of remind ourselves and you look at the players that they've got at their disposal. So, yeah, I went for a narrow West Ham win. I went for a 2-1 in this one, which I know won't be very popular and that probably goes against the grain of what a lot of people are thinking.
Yeah, there's a lot of boos, and people who are listen to this in their cars, on their walks, or wherever they're listening to, they go, boo, Stuart Watson. But you made a fair point. West Ham are still, as you racked off a lot of those signings.
Spent 40 million quid on Max Kilman at centre-half from Wolves. I'm just looking at their team. They've still got Paqueta. They've still got... They signed Wan-Bissaka from Man United. It is a good team still. I know it's all about... As Alex says, it's big on vibes, and that's probably where that prediction's come from. And I completely get that. If they lose to Brentford, it could feel semi toxic. I would imagine by the time Ipswich go there. But as I said ahead of the Southampton game, none of these games are to be underestimated. Ipswich are the major underdogs from everyone in this division, and we can't lose sight of that.
I think there's a similarity in a way that they need time to click because we've spoken about Town needing it and the players have said, oh, we're going to be a different team in November. West Ham, totally the same thing. You look at the amount of new players they've got to bed in under a new manager playing in a new system. On paper, if this team's performing this badly in a month's time or two months' time, then there'll be huge warning signs. And, you know, it's football fans' nature. If you don't see an immediate improvement and really good signs from the start, that you're going to already turn. So that could play a part. But I do think that, yeah, this could be one where if they have a week on the training ground going into the Ipswich game, then potentially they're going to come out and they'll be a much improved team. But I am a vibes man when it comes to these kind of things.
Well, there's no doubt it's a good time to go there. If you could pick a time to go to West Ham at this stage of the season after the start they've had and while they're still kind of bedding players in, you'd pick now, wouldn't you?
Yeah, very much so. I'm just looking at West Ham. The last four seasons, they've really done well, haven't they? You know, ninth last year, which is not too bad, really. 14th, which is okay, but obviously they won the Conference League. They finished seventh in 2021-22, and then in the COVID season, they finished sixth. So they've had a, you know, pretty good last 4 years, haven't they? And I still have, you know, dark memories of West Ham, though, beating Ipswich Town in the semi-final playoffs back-to-back years in the early 2000s or mid-2000s. But yeah, AJ?
I'm sure that we'll touch on this a bit next week when we build up to this game. But one of the biggest issues, I think, at West Ham is that David Moyes did such an incredibly good job that it set up for things to go bad, because you can't sustain that. If you're taking a squad that is outside of the kind of perennial top six and bringing them into that and you can't sustain it, then when you fall out, then that's when the negativity comes. So I think that's part of what's happened here, and the expectations have come. What managers find is that you make a rod for your own back sometimes by being really good. And I think that's what happened with David Moyes.
It's post Mick McCarthy at Ipswich, isn't it? All over again, that we all kind of knew he was doing a job beyond his resources. And he had to play a certain way in order to get the best out of what you've got. And it's fine when you're winning, but when you stop winning, it just starts to feel a bit ugly and boring. And we had that exact same feeling of almost a 50-50 split amongst the fan base with Mick McCarthy. And it was exactly the same with David Moyes as well. There was those that sort of said, it's up, you know, and then Moyes gets a bit spiky towards the end, saying, I think you'll find I've delivered more than most West Ham managers in the modern era, and what more do you want? And then, as I think, as every Ipswich fan will know, whenever all these sort of debates come up in the national press, very wary of sort of jumping in on the kind of be careful what you wish for stuff, looking from afar, because unless you go week in, week out and pay your hard-earned money to watch it and don't get entertained, you haven't got as much of a right to have a say. But it does feel like that same sort of situation that Ipswich kind of had when obviously it all went drastically wrong post Mick McCarthy. And who's to say West Ham, it might go that way horribly, horribly wrong for them. And we kind of discussed surprise teams that might get sort of dragged into the dogfight this year. Who's to say West Ham might not be one of those? But too early to say on that score, I think.
Very much so. And obviously, they've had to sell some big players, haven't they, West Ham, like Declan Rice. Obviously, that was mad money, but obviously, he's gone to do well at Arsenal. But so, a defeat and a narrow win, AJ and Stu's gone for. And I'm going to, do I go in the middle? Do I go on the fence for a draw? Yes, I am. That is what I'm going to do. And it's going to be a 1-1 draw. And I'll take that away from home. Every point is a good point away from home. As Mick McCarthy used to say, I wouldn't get off the bus if you gave me a point. So yeah, a draw there. So I've only given Town 1 point in the opening two games in this predictions. AJ's gone 3. Stu, no points yet on the board in these two games. But next up, though, is the Stuart Watson derby at Portman Road. Everton come to town. Sean Dyche and co. Will he still be the manager at Everton? That's the question when we go into this game. When is this game? Let me get it up. When is it?
It's post-international break, which I think does make things a little bit spicy, where I'm just going to check what the next two games are. They're home to Palace and then home to Newcastle. So two home games.
Oh.
And talk of Gareth Southgate in the press this week. Wow. With the new ownerships, they have had their takeover now. The big reason why, sorry, I kind of jumped in a bit and started running with this, but big reason why I was negative on Everton going into this season with my pre-season predictions was because the takeover fell through just before I started writing it, and vibes, bad vibes. That's where actually the whole point on vibes I've been so big on, that's where a lot of this came from, was the view on Everton. So that's now gone through, but does the fact it's happened outside of the summer transfer window impact things a little bit? Yeah, that's the next question. But it will definitely put pressure on Sean Dyche in the next couple of weeks if they want to get their own man in.
What do you reckon then, Stu? We've been waiting for this fixture for so long, haven't we? You know, it's Town taking on Everton, and it's finally here in the Premier League. We always thought, oh, FA Cup draw or something, maybe the Carabao Cup. But it's a Premier League top flight clash between Ipswich and Everton. How are you feeling for this one, mate?
Yeah, I've been waiting for it for so long. I don't think everyone else has been kind of on tenterhooks. When are Ipswich finally going to play Everton?
We have, for all of us.
Yeah, thank you.
I don't think the listeners have all been like that. Although I have seen quite a few people say things like that, saying, oh, I really want to see Everton play Ipswich for that reason. So
yeah, there's been many times over the years where both numbers have been in the hat for cup draws, and it's felt really close and not quite happened. So yeah, that'll be an interesting experience for me, watching the club that I've reported on for best part of 15 years against the team that I grew up supporting. As I say this, I'm trying to remind myself what prediction I actually did for this Everton game. Right, okay. So I've just outlined two defeats to Villa and West Ham, which would leave Ipswich with 3 points after seven games, wouldn't it? Pressure starting to build a little bit, and then everyone post-international break goes Everton at home. This is the chance now. Everton, after the start that they've had, you can hear the tone of voice already, can't you, Ross? Everton thumped at home by Brighton opening day, then go and lose 4-0 at Tottenham. And they've managed to blow a two-goal lead, not once, but twice against Bournemouth and Villa, and have to again make do with a point against Leicester after taking the lead against them. Still a good team, though, Ross. They played well in spells. I have a look at it. In those games, having kind of watched extended highlights, you don't score twice in those games without playing really well. And defensively, there's issues. Vibes off the pitch, there's issues. But there is now talk of a takeover finally going through. Is that gonna lift things a little bit? I don't know. I'll cut to the chase. I've gone with a draw, Ross. I've gone with a 1-1 draw.
That's fine.
What do you think?
That's fine. I was just about to expect another defeat, and I thought, oh, dearie me, Sto, three defeats in a row here. Yeah, this will be a tough game after the international break as well, but I think Portland Road is just the big factor here. If that was at Goodison Park, then a different story. But because it's at Portland Road, I'm actually going to go for a win. This is Town's first win of the season. Sorry, Sto. I take your points on board. I just have that feeling. You know, Everton may, you know, it will be a very tough game, but I don't know. I think we may nick something here. Maybe a 1-0 win. That's what I'm going to go for. So Town's first win in the Premier League since, you know, 20 plus years will be against your boyhood boys. Sorry, Sto. But AJ, what do you reckon?
This is really tough now because my gut says that this is probably a good chance for Town to win and a one that I can see them winning. If I do say that, will mean they're winning back-to-back Premier League games, which feels fantastic, but also feels almost a little bit extreme. I feel like I need to temper my expectations a little bit here rather than just coming on and saying all this stuff. But I've got to be different and fun and exciting and all that kind of stuff. So I'm going to go with a win. And I'm going to say that each side of the international break, Ipswich Town are going to win a Premier League game. I'm going to say they're going to pick up 6 points. And I think that this little bit can be earmarked as an opportunity, right? Because we speak about this whole run as kind of quote-unquote winnable games here. And I think that they'll be looking at this saying, if we can go in here, put in some fantastic performances, it's going to take off a huge amount of pressure going forward. That's not just looking ahead to United and Tottenham and games like that, but we're also talking about the following week, which is a tough game, which we'll get on to. And I just think they'll have enough to do it. Everton like going in front and then losing, so I'm going to go with a 2-1 Town win from behind. But again, this is another one where predicting quite far in advance here. If Sean Dyche is not in charge, who knows what the case is going to be there. If they've got a new manager, anything can happen. So want to wait and see. But if you're asking me now with a water pistol to my head, I'm saying a 2-1 Town win and back-to-back Premier League victories.
I will say, yeah, as Alex has just touched upon there, we reserve the right to change any of these nearer the time because a lot can change. So I've got these predictions going out in a written piece tomorrow. We're all throwing some scores around now, but vibes are big. We've established that in the last few pods, and a lot can change. I mean, that Everton game is now, how many weeks away is that? 1, 2, that's 3 weeks away, that game. A lot can change in 3 weeks. But, in the here and now, a bit like West Ham, probably to a greater degree than West Ham, they feel like a club in a bit of a negative moment. So, what do you reckon, Ross?
I said a win.
You said a win, sorry.
Okay. Yeah, it's fine. But I don't know. You're making me change it, though. Every time you speak, Stu, I'm like, oh.
I just look at Everton and I go, well, they've got England's goalkeeper in goal and Pickford. They've got Calvert-Lewin up front who won't be short of transfer interest. McNeil's coming up with some good stats at the moment. Experienced centre-halves in Keane and Tarkowski. Do think we all have to keep our feet pretty firmly on the floor in the scale of all of these challenges coming up for Ipswich. But look, spoiler alert.
He can convince you that Town are going to win the league.
Spoiler alert, it does get better, these predictions. So let's move on.
All right, we've got two more predictions to go. And one against Brentford and one against Leicester, which I have a feeling that could be Stu. Anyway, Brentford though, boys, I think they're a very good team. Thomas Frank has done a very good job there. And once again, they're a model, you know, we hopefully one day will wish we can follow. But, you know, what a story Brentford have had. This will be my first ever visit to Brentford Stadium. Will it be the same for you, Stu and AJ?
Yep.
AJ's been there. Okay.
Been once before. It was one of the first games I played at that stadium. I went to go cover them against Stoke in the Championship. So, yes, it's happened once before. Nice sausage roll. That's about all I can remember, really.
Nice. Yeah, I do miss Griffin's Park, though. Oh, I used to love
that was great. The press box less so because it was really cramped. But the actual ground, I think I went once as a supporter. And obviously the fact that you've got four pubs, one in each corner, love it. Brilliant.
And the two-tier away stand, or three-tier, was it? The tiered two, away stand, two-tier away stand really cool. looked good as well. I don't know what it was like to be in. That always brings back memories of talking of Mick McCarthy's end days at Ipswich Town where he got a bit, talking about sort of getting toxic. That was where he got a bit of dog's abuse that day, didn't he? And says he had to be sort of smuggled out the back door to get on the coach. And that was his penultimate game before the desk thumping exit at Portman Road, wasn't it? They had some good battles with Brentford during that sort of during that mid tens era when Brentford were just starting to come together with all the data analysis and everything. And they've obviously now really established themselves as a Premier League club, bit of a model like Brighton for Ipswich to look at and take inspiration from.
Very much so. I'm just having a little look. This is their fourth consecutive season in the Premier League. And also they've got some good players. Stu, you said the positive predictions coming up now. Is this one of them or what do you reckon?
Positive in that it's a draw. I know people are going, hang on a minute, you still haven't, and now we'll be what, 9 games in with no win still, wouldn't it, if this is correct? Even Tony's left, Visser's injured, but they still look like a pretty good functioning team, don't they? 1-1 away to Brentford. I think a draw at Brentford would be enough. You know, we talked about any point away from home in the Premier League being a good one. I think they look like they'd be another mid-table finish for Brentford from what we've seen so far. So a point, and I think that would be a good point.
Yeah, I'm going to go for a point as well. I'm going to go for a draw. I'm going to go Desmondo, 2-2, loads of goals in this one. Away games, I think I'm going to be lazy, everybody. I'm just going to predict draws away from home most of the time against teams I feel like they're good, but we can just maybe get stuff and, like, you know, we got a draw at Brighton, which was unbelievable. And I think Brentford could be the similar one, although I'm predicting goals in this one. So, I do like Brighton, though, as a club. I think they're, you know, really good setup. I'm looking forward to going to the G-Tech Community Stadium, I think that's what it's called. which is great. AJ, what do you reckon? Are you going to put another win? Are you going to make it three wins in a row? Ooh.
No, I think they're going to lose. I'm going to go for a defeat here. And I like Brentford's home form. Beaten Palace, beaten Southampton, beat Orient in the Cup. They went to Man City, probably should have got a result there. They did enough based on their performance at the Etihad to get a result from that game, really looking at full 90 minutes, even if the stats don't fully show it. From what I'd seen of that match, I thought they were really, really impressive. Losing Visser is a big blow, but I've been really, really impressed with them so far. The fact that they can take him out and have someone like Carvalho, who I think might be their record signing, come in. A fantastic player that we saw in the Championship last year. I'm sure he'll make the step up. I like the back five system and the flexibility there. I think Thomas Frank as a manager is a really underrated tactician. I think, to be honest, we talk about Kieran McKenna being in line for a big job at some point. I'm stunned that Thomas Frank has not been linked to it, or at least linked to more huge, huge clubs, because I think he's such an impressive manager. When you look at what he's working with, these are good players, but they're not exactly world beaters, and to be able to sustain them in the division for that long, I think speaks volumes about how good he is. Again, this is one to judge the next two games on. I mean, going to United will be a tough ask for them in a few weeks' time, but home games against West Ham and Wolves to come. If they're going to establish themselves in the division based on home form, and going to Brentford is tough, has been for a while, then these are the kind of games that they'll need to get points from. So it'll be interesting to see how they do it against West Ham and Wolves. But this is one where I think it might catch up with them a little bit.
I think it's a month away, this game. It's the 26th of October, which is just... But this is just...
It's quite funny that we did these predictions bits last year, and sometimes you'd be predicting five games in a row, and it would take you to the end of the month. And we're doing it now, and it's taking us into November.
Yeah, because it's just... They're so sparse, aren't they, the games? Which is, you know, good for the players to recover, and, you know, all of us just to recover, and fans as well. But yeah, so going into the final prediction, into the 2nd of November, Leicester City at Portland Road. Obviously, we went head-to-head with the Foxes last year in the Championship. Both doing similar this year in the league. What do you reckon, Stu? Leicester City, of course, got a new manager. It's not Enzo McKenna. It will be Cooper. I nearly say Graham Potter there. Cooper versus McKenna.
This is where the first win comes from, Ross. This will be game 10 for Ipswich Town, and I haven't predicted a win so far. This is where I think it will come. I think Ipswich... I've gone for a draw against Everton, a draw against Brentford, I think, and they'll go into the Leicester game with a bit of confidence at home. They'll use that Portman Road atmosphere and vibes around Leicester. There was... The Foxes faithful didn't seem happy bunnies, even when things were going seemingly quite smoothly from the outside looking in last season. They were a winning machine. They looked like they were running away with the Championship, but they weren't too enamoured with a slightly sort of robotic style of play under Maresca. And then in the end, sort of stumbled over the line, didn't they? Had a major wobble at the end. Did end up as champions. Ultimately, Maresca goes off to Chelsea. In comes Cooper, and it sounds like he's got a bit of work to do to win them over. I think there was a fan running on the pitch and shouting at him during a 0-0 draw against Walsall in the Carabao Cup this week. They won that game on penalties in the end. Same start to Ipswich, I think 3 draws, 2 defeats so far. Lost Dewsbury Hall this summer. Didn't do anything wild in the transfer window with kind of FFP stuff hanging over them. Still got a 37-year-old Jamie Vardy leading the line for them at the moment. This, I think, represents a really good opportunity for Ipswich to win. And I've got them down for a 2-1 is what is the score that I've put next to it.
Oh, praise the Lord. Stuart Watson's predicted a win. But although we respect his working out on the last few predictions. And I'm going to go for another win here. This will be Town's second win in the Premier League after 10 games played. Obviously, Portland Road is another big factor. And I think this is a game where a lot of Town fans will be confident. And it will still be a tough game because Leicester have still got, you know, a good team. I've got Jamie Vardy in my FPL at the moment, although I'm going to get rid of him because he only got me 2 points, which was annoying. So, sorry, Jamie, but you're gone. But yeah, I'm going to go for a win. I'm going to go for... Do we go for a lot of goals? I think we're going to score a lot of goals maybe in this. Maybe a loads. Let's do... Do you know what? 4-2. 4-2. Loads of goals, please. That would be nice. Going into the first game in November. AJ, what do you reckon? You've been, you know, pretty positive, pretty confident with some games. What do you reckon with this one?
It's quite funny because I was thinking if I was following Stu's prediction pattern, I'd be really worried about this game. Just from a perspective of coming into November and needing a win and the pressure that comes with that, and pressure can create diamonds, but can also cause players and teams to crumble. But with my set of predictions, which has two wins before this point, I'd be a little bit more positive that the pressure would be off. I think if this was the case, I'd imagine them to have a pretty decent gap on Leicester by this point, seeing as Leicester have to go to Arsenal, host Bournemouth, huge game against Southampton, host Forest. And then before this game, they go to Man United in the Carabao Cup, which is the midweek on the Wednesday, which is a bit of a, it's a bit grim that, having to go all the way to Old Trafford and then just, 3 days later, come and play Town. That could play a part, you know? It depends how much they want to rotate. When you look at it, not really been bad. And I understand some of the negativity that comes around Cooper and his style of play. But given the fact that they've been limited in terms of what they've been able to do, with the resources, the fact the squad has changed, but not massively. Draw against Tottenham, narrow defeats to Leicester and to Aston Villa, which are not horrendous by any means. Then getting a point at Palace and a point at home to Everton. They're not bad results at all. And I am going to go with the win. I was originally going to go with the win to nil, but looking at their record of scoring in games, I was quite impressed. But I do wonder if the negativity and the vibes around this club will tell over time. Again, will Steve Cooper be in charge of the football club if that continues over an extended period with this tough run that they've got? So I'll copy Stu with this one. I'll probably go with a 2-1 win.
Don't mind that. So let's quickly do our calculations.
I've been scribbling them down. Ross, just remind me what you had for Everton.
A win, my friend.
A win. Okay. Right, I think I've got a tally for each of us.
Okay.
Right. Top end of the positivity chart. Alex Jones.
Yeah.
Three wins, two defeats, 9 points from the next five. Like second, it. Ross, you've got two wins, two draws, one defeat, 8 points from five games. And bottom of that, I've got 5 points. One win, two draws, two defeats. So five from the next five, which I know that sounds quite negative, would be an improvement on the first five. We've had three from five in the first block, five from five in the second block. And there would be a moment, if my predictions were right, if we got to game nine without a win, where certainly the national media and externally they'd be well and truly written off. I think even the most optimistic of Ipswich fans at that stage would be having a pretty serious crisis of confidence. But I had a look at it, and it would be, so what would that be, 8 points after 10 games, which if you extrapolate that over a season, takes you to 30, which would have been enough to keep you up last season. Luton went down with 26. So add in the fact that we all believe that this team will get better as the season goes on under McKenna. I don't think that would be a disaster. I really don't. So hopefully it will be nearer your end of the scale than mine over these next five games. One thing I am really certain on is that there has to be a win in this next five. It has to come somewhere. When you've got home games against Everton and Leicester, they represent really good opportunities, don't they? How many do you think Ipswich need to win? I think McKenna's already referenced maybe needing to win 8 or 9 games, and the good chance is that the bulk of those wins will have to come at Portman Road at some point. So I think one of those games has to be won. Hopefully it will be.
Yeah, hopefully you've enjoyed that, ladies and gentlemen. Let us know your prediction for the next five games. AJ, do you reckon we'll be in the bottom three after those five games? Your prediction, no, we should hopefully be.
Not with mine, no. I mean, the thing is, no matter what I think I'm probably going to be somewhere in that area, even with mine. I mean, if you put them on to 9 points now, that would take them to, depending on goal difference, kind of 8th, 9th. So factor in everyone moving up with that as well, you'd probably have them kind of around the mid-table mark if that was the case. I think that the league position to me is not really important and won't become important to me until probably Christmas, to be perfectly honest. I think the most important thing is starting to create gaps and picking out these teams that you can finish above. We spoke about this on the podcast earlier in the week, looking at teams that could get sucked into this. Wolves, Everton, Southampton, Palace maybe, Leicester for sure, and potentially, again, as we spoke about, West Ham. If you're then starting to create these gaps, that's going to be really, really important, knowing that these teams are not going to win a huge amount of games, knowing that then you can really target these specific one-on-one matches that you're going to have, like hosting Southampton next year and going to Molineux in December, that will be really important. And there'll be big opportunities there to just extend the gap and make sure that hopefully they can be safe as soon as possible. It's easier said than done doing that. But yeah, this is clearly an opportunity with this run and just starting to look at these key matchups and in terms of who's going to be fighting the drop and hopefully extending a bit of a gap. And even now, I know that it's so early at the moment, but knowing that you've got a couple of points on a Southampton, I genuinely think that does give you a kind of a form of motivation, knowing that there is that gap there. And if they can get that bigger and bigger and bigger, then yeah, only positives to come.
It is early, but there's less games in the Premier League, isn't it? It's 38 games as opposed to 46. And suddenly at the end of that block that we've just talked about, you're more than a quarter of the way into the season when you look at it like that. And you don't want to be playing catch up too much, because it's a very difficult league to do that in. Worth pointing out that it's Southampton v Leicester in amongst this block. I haven't got the exact date to hand, so that will be one to keep an eye on as well.
October 19th, which I think is the same day that Town face Everton at Portman
Weekend.
Road. So a bit like, I think we've almost had the same thing last weekend when Town played Southampton, Leicester played Everton. So it's almost just going to be a flip around of that. That is going to be really interesting in the relegation battle.
And yeah, even just Wolves and those teams who are down there, you know, they'll be looking out their fixtures and going, oh, how they get on. Oh, they won. Oh, no. But we shall see. But no, it could be interesting next 5 games, boys. We shall now segue on to the game this Sunday against Aston Villa. We covered it a little bit earlier, but Stu, how are you feeling for this one? Back at Portman Road, which feels like an age. You know, it was the Fulham game. When was that? That was August. I think end of August.
August 31st.
Wow. Just madness. Yeah.
Month ago.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, looking for, yeah, that's the first thing to say. Can't wait to get back to Portman Road. The atmosphere's been incredible for the Liverpool and the Fulham game so far. There's definitely a 12th man factor there. We've talked about sort of negative vibes around several clubs in that chat. Massive positivity around Ipswich Town at the moment. I just think everyone's fully united behind the players on the pitch, and that's going to be a really big factor in the season. Even if Ipswich go for several games without winning, even if they're getting written off externally, I think that will kind of pull people together. Already we're kind of seeing people rallying against certain narratives around the club and everything. So yeah, that's the first thing to say. Can't wait, and it'll be interesting to see if some of the lessons learnt from these first 5 games, certainly from the Liverpool and the Man City games, can be kind of put into practice against another very good side.
The one thing about Villa as well, their story has been interesting, because the last time we played Villa was in the Championship, you know, when we got relegated, and we've gone into the League One tour. Villa obviously got promoted and they're now playing Champions League football. It's mad how things can change so quickly. And obviously Town, we've had an incredible, you know, last 5 years from relegation to back-to-back promotions. But shall we talk about Villa as a team before we go on to Town's team? Obviously, they've got some incredible players. John Duran, obviously, has been scoring a lot of goals recently. Scored an absolute weldy the other week. He also spells John very weirdly, doesn't he? He has the H before the O.
John.
John. Is that how you actually say? Don't say John, it's just John.
I don't think so. I think it would just, I'd just call him John. Let's not confuse John. People.
Good old John. But yeah, Stu, do you want to name check any players? Any players you're looking forward to seeing in the flesh? Because obviously got Martinez in goal, who is a World Cup winner with Argentina. Anybody else?
You can go through them all, can't you? World Cup winning goalkeeper, Spanish international centre-half in Pau Torres, Lucas Digne at left-back, loads of caps for France, Onana and Tielemans in midfield, bags of caps for Belgium between the two of them. Ollie Watkins has just scored in a latter stages of a major international tournament for England, bags of goals last season. And then some good young English talent in people like Morgan Rogers and Jacob Ramsey and others. I mean, the fact that they've bought Ross Barkley in the summer and he's having to make do with the place on the bench at the moment. Duran, that you've mentioned, is having to make do with a place on the bench. They spent loads of money on Ian Mattson, left back, who was at Dortmund last year. They bought him from Chelsea, £37 million, and he's another one on the bench. So, as I mentioned earlier on, they're a good squad. They've added to it further. I, like Alex, kind of wondered whether European football might take its toll on them. But they seem to have kind of adapted to that pretty well thus far. So rested a load of players in midweek at Wickham in the League Cup. 10 changes. I think Onana was the only player that sort of kept his place in that. So they should come into this relatively fresh.
Yeah, and obviously, they've got Jadon Philogene, who obviously that was a transfer saga, although I don't think he's played many games as either Villa. I think he's made two appearances or something like that. But also, they've got a great manager in Emery, who I just love every time he does an interview. If it's in the evening, he just says, good evening. Obviously, I can't do his accent because, I just can't. But I love that. AJ, come in, my friend. What do you reckon for this one?
Ross offending the entire country of Spain in one fell swoop. I think the injuries are quite interesting in terms of this. I believe Luca Dean came off at half-time with a knock. John McGinn's done his hamstring. That was both in the Wolves game, so John McGinn's definitely missing. I think Luca Dean might be missing as well. So that's already two areas where they need to make changes. You'd imagine Martin would come in for Luca Dean. And then Leon Bailey, I think, got minutes against Wickham with the idea that he will probably start at Portman Road. I'd rather it was John McGinn up against Leif Davis on that flank for 90 minutes, because Leon Bailey is a proper speedster, is the kind of player that will try and exploit those gaps in behind. And we all know that Leif Davis wants to get up the pitch, particularly at home. Stu touched on it, the English base, that the EFL core in this squad, because they've got lots of money, they spend a load of it. Ezri Konsa comes through at Brentford. Morgan Rogers was someone who had loan spells in the EFL. I remember him playing for Lincoln when they almost got promoted out of League One. They're going to Middlesbrough. They've got Jacob Ramsey, who I think he had a loan spell at Doncaster. Ollie Watkins is a proper made in the EFL footballer, having played at Western Supermare about 10 years ago. And the fact that all of these guys have come together, and it's obviously with a lot of big money signings in there, like Pau Torres, like Onana, like Tielemans. Really, really like what they put together there. And I think that John Duran does deserve a mention as well, because we've spoken about him not going into the team. His record off the bench is 4 goals off the bench so far this season in 5 games. The only game where he hasn't scored off the bench in the Premier League has been at Arsenal, which is ridiculous. And then obviously scored starting against Wickham. I'd imagine he's probably going to go back onto the bench to allow Ollie Watkins to come in here. But wow, what a player in terms of what he can bring off the bench. It's a terrifying thing when you must see the board coming up and see him coming on. And his goal against Everton, I'm assuming we've all seen that, where he whacks it in from God knows how far out. So, yeah, they've got a lot of depth, a lot of quality in that. I think Unai Emery is a brilliant manager and tactician. So, as I said in the predictions, I think this will be a tough one to get anything from. But the Portman Road factor, I think, is also important in it.
They've got some issues in defence as well. I see Diego Carlos is now an injury doubt, their centre-half. He was on the bench for the League Cup game in midweek and had to come off the bench after feeling something in the warm-up, and a non-specific injury. He was out for a very long time when he first signed for Villa, wasn't he, in his first season. So that might mean that Konsa has to move inside from right-back to centre-half. Matty Cash is normally their right back. He picked up a hamstring injury against Arsenal. I think it's touch and go whether he's fit in time to play this one. I think he's targeting the Bayern Munich game. That's who their next opponents will be after this one in midweek next week. If Cash isn't fit, then it might be Lamar Bogard playing at right back again, who is a very young player who's just making his first steps in the Villa team. He's the nephew of Winston Bogart, by the way, if you remember him. So I think he's been feeling his way into the team, I think. So maybe that might be an area for Ipswich to potentially target Leif Davis getting down that left side. We'll have to see.
I just thought I'd mention as well, I don't think we touched on Jaden Philogene, I believe, has also got a knock. Which has got him ruled out of this one. I would have been interested to see what his reception would have been, because I think everyone kind of understands and appreciates the move that he made. But with everything that happened with the saga, with his agent, it would have been interesting. But he last played, I think he got a minute off the bench at Everton midway through the month. I think he's got a knock that he's trying to nurse back. So don't expect to see him in the squad at Portman Road, unfortunately.
That's all right.
Fortunately.
Yeah. Move on. Shall we talk, though, boys, about the Town team? Obviously, there's one change at Southampton, which was Calvin Phillips dropping out and Jens Kajust came in. Obviously, you spoke to McKenna, Stu, about Phillips, and it's just a minor injury. And do you reckon he'll be back for this one?
Hope so, yeah. That's how it was described, that just something that he felt in training and they didn't want to take a risk. They're probably mindful of this block of games that we've just discussed and how big some of them are. And I think Calvin Phillips, I've written that a couple of times as well. Calvin Phillips is going to be, crucial to Ipswich this season. We talked about them having young players with plenty of room to grow, but he is at the heart of this team, providing someone with proper top flight nous and quality. And I think we started to see that, you know, his improvements as he was starting to get fit. So I thought they missed him at Southampton. That's not a knock on Kajustu. I thought he was okay, and I'm sure he will get better as time goes on. But hopefully Phillips is back for this one. We'll find out more at Kieran's presser tomorrow lunchtime, Friday lunchtime.
Indeed. And obviously, I think I've jinxed Luke Wolfenden, by the way, boys, because I did like a post pre-Brighton saying he could make his 200th appearance tomorrow against them. Obviously, he hasn't played the last two games. And obviously, Dara O'Shea's come in and he's done pretty well. Although it's Portman Road, do you reckon Wolfenden will be back into the team, boys? What do you reckon?
No. And I think a big part of this, again, I don't mind chopping and changing centre-backs, unlike Stu, who I think is vehemently against the idea of kind of altering the back line. I think Dara O'Shea is going to be crucial up against Ollie Watkins in terms of the pace battle there, in terms of being able to close him down 1v1. I wouldn't feel as comfortable with Wolfie coming in for this game. I just think in terms of that battle, in terms of the marking there, that would be a pretty important one to keep the same.
Okay, I don't mind that. Shall we look at the whole of the team, Stu? Any other changes, or do you think McKenna will keep with his lineups for the last few weeks?
Minimal changes, if any. Hopefully Phillips back in midfield. Top end of the pitch is one we always have a discussion around. So we had Burns, Amari, Schmodix in behind Delap, haven't we? The last game. Is that the last? How many games in a row has that been now for that four?
Two
games.
Burns came back against Brighton.
Yeah. Don't know if I can see many changes to that, to be honest. Well, Benner for Burns on the right is obviously an option. People talking about whether Jack Clark comes in for Schmodix at some stage for that left-sided role. At what stage is Jack Clark sort of unleashed? What is the right type of game to unleash him in? But I think it will probably be that same four again, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I was just saying Jack Clark came on for Smodix on the 62nd minute, so he came on really early, but I think it was just we needed to just change up, didn't we, at Southampton? I think we just needed to bring those on. But yeah, can't see any other changes, really. I don't think, Axel's not going to get dropped. Davis obviously is not going to get dropped at left back. Your any thoughts, AJ? Do you think, you know, Hurst particularly could start in this game, or do you think Delap is set in stone at the moment?
I don't think it's hard to drop Liam Delap. I think I could see one of the wide options getting changed. Benathan Burns potentially. I think it's about forecasting who the fullbacks are going to be, because it looks like there is a chance that both fullbacks are going to be different from the ones that played against Wolves if Diego Carlos is an injury issue and Ezra Konsa has to come in centre-back, and obviously then with a doubt over Luka Dean, do you want to have... I mean, but there are similarities between obviously Wes Burns and Chiog Bene. Do you want to have maybe a slightly more natural threat on the left with Jack Clark if you're going to be coming up against a right-back who was it you said was going to potentially
Lamar Bogart. Yeah,
who I'm pretty sure might be... Is he a natural right-back? I think he played centre-back against Wickham. I think he's a natural centre-back. So potentially that right side could be a little bit more vulnerable. Do you then want to have someone like Jack Clark, who is a more natural left-sided player, different to Sami Smodic? And then the one thing to point out with Smodic is that Town have struggled to get him into games recently. He's not had the touches. He's not had that many opportunities. Obviously, he had a couple of good ones at Southampton, but he's not had as much time with the ball as he would have liked. Is this the kind of game where you want to have a Jack Clark come in? So I could see them shaking things up a little bit with this one. I don't think it'll be wholesale changes by any means. I think Phillips is the one you want to come and see into the team. But other than that, maybe, yeah, one of the wide players getting changed. I'd be interested as well to see what someone like Sami Smodic could do off the bench with the energy and the running and maybe getting an hour on the bench to see where the gaps are in the game and then be able to find them. I think he might be someone that could benefit from something like that.
I don't think it's impossible that George Hurst gets the nod over Liam Delap at some stage when both are fully fit. I think there's going to be a period of making sure that George Hurst, you know, gets himself fully up to speed before that decision is made. But they are different styles of centre-forward. I think George Hurst is more of a link player. And I'm sure Kieran McKenna will decide, you know, which games are most suited for him at some stage. But, you know, allied with Delap's form that we've discussed, I don't think this week is there's a decision to be made there just yet.
OK, we shall wait and see. George Hurst's first goal in the Premier League for Town will be against Leicester. That's my hot take. I know that's a while away. Oh. So he has to wait a while for him to score his first goal. But, yeah, that'd be a nice little talking point, wouldn't it, for him to score his first goal. The winner as well.
He's certainly fired up by certain players have to find their motivation in different ways. And every time we've spoken to George Hurst, whether it was playing Blackburn where he had limited minutes, where it was Rotherham where he had limited minutes, Leicester where obviously ultimately decided to let him go after dropping down into the Championship, he's been very quick to kind of say point to prove stuff. So yeah, I'm sure that's a game that he's gotten more than half an eye on coming up.
Yeah, because sadly he got injured, didn't he, in the Boxing Day game against Leicester. In the first half. So obviously I don't think he played in the reverse fixture because I think he was still injured, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, that'd be right, because those two games were in quick succession, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. That was in January, weren't it, the second game. But yeah, so that'd be an interesting one. Battles all over the place. Well, we've gone over the hour, boys. Been a great pod. Hope you've enjoyed it, ladies and gentlemen. But any other business from you, Stu and AJ? As I said, you're going to be heading off to Kieran McKenna's press conference tomorrow, Friday afternoon, to get some more info on team news and all that jazz. But anything else from you, Stu? Do you want to say anything?
No other business.
Nice one. AJ, anything from you?
Yeah, quick one that I've done before with this one. I like the positive vibes at Ipswich, but not every club has that. And I think it's important to use the platform to have a quick mention about Reading. Again, club that have had so many downs, and at the moment, they had a takeover that was going to save the club that fell through last minute. And now Michael Olise sell-on money is keeping the club alive until Christmas. So I think it's important to raise that point. You know, this is a former Premier League club with lots of jobs on the line. And I think it's important that lots of people are aware of this situation, especially when Town are up in the Premier League enjoying life. Things can change very, very quickly. And hopefully people can learn more about the situation going on there and help things change sooner rather than later.
No, good point, because I'm obviously their women's team as well. They've gone, you know, they used to be an established, you know, championship team, even a Premier League team, a Super League team. Mm. And now I don't think they're even, I think they're now gone really down, so which is sad to see. But
they withdrew, didn't they? I think and the 21s are going to drop out as well. It's an academy that, again, has produced players like Michael Olise, for example, and others. So it's obviously about the on-pitch stuff in this as well, but there's loads of jobs, there's loads of people's livelihoods, people who go to just watch the football every single week. And the fact that that can literally all vanish by Christmas is a pretty scary thought. I know it's been an ongoing thing with Reading for a long, long time, but when everything looked like it was going to change, for that to immediately just get wiped out in a heartbeat, I think must be pretty, pretty gutting for all of them there. So sending best wishes and hopefully they can get things sorted pretty soon.
No, good point, friend. And we actually went to Reading last season, didn't we, in the cup. So was it the last year or the year before? That was last year because Kieran Slicker, you know, saving the penalties and all that.
That feels like a lifetime ago.
I think it was a year ago because I think it was in September, wasn't it, I think, that game?
We had a long detour to get to that game. Yeah. That's most of what I remember. That drive was very long.
Yeah, but no, good point to make. And to finish off the pod, some positives. The Town women, Joe Sheehan's side, have had an impressive start to the season. Last night at Billericay, they won 6-0. Sophie Pescott, who is just a superstar, scored a first half hat trick. And they've basically won all their games so far this season. They're not top of the table, though, which is annoying. But they've got two games in hand on Hashtag, who are top. So if they win those two games in hand, they're going to be top of the table. So it should be a very exciting season for the Issuestown women's side. And they've got to travel to Devon again this weekend in the Fornal Cup. They went to Devon last week, but the game was postponed like 10 minutes before the game was about to start because of the weather and stuff like that. And that must have been frustrating to go all the way down there and not play a game. I think they were able to train at Chippenham, do like a little bit of a, you know, game between themselves, you know, the squad, you know, just have a nice training session. But hopefully they go to Devon this Sunday and they will have a game. But a really impressive start to the season for Joe Sheehan's side, so which is great to see. It's been another great pod. Stu, AJ, thanks for joining me. Thanks, everyone, for listening to another Kings of Anglia Town podcast. If you haven't already, of course, support our sponsors at Manscaped. Use the code KOA to get 20% off. Follow us on all the socials. If you're going to the game, enjoy. If not, follow the coverage with us as always. And we'll see you next time. And actually, I haven't mentioned this. Stu's been wearing the KOA, one of the KOA t-shirts. So check out our merch store. Look at that. Stu with his big guns. Love seeing that. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time. Bye-bye for now.